me, as always, is my co-host.
Iffy Wadiway, how's it going?
Iffy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, feeling freshened up, ready to go, ready to talk about tabletop. This is a fun subject. There's so many. This is going to be a very interesting episode. I mean, all our episodes are interesting, but I like that. It's going to have turns and
twists
cut corner and twists and turns, betrayal.
I know.
So
death. Resurrection.
And then we'll wrap it up with a fun talk with our guest, our good friend Emma Fife, who, you know, you can watch her playing tabletop games almost.
Every week on HyperRPG, where you and I played a live tabletop game. That was a Valiant. That's a Valiant Comics. Iffy and I were on a show. And we also, Valiant Vanquish, pretty cool because we were made into comic book characters and we actually, this is just some Nerdificent lore, Iffy and I ended up in a Valiant comic.
Yeah.
So that's certain that I sent to my grandparents.
Yeah. So you remember these I used to read? I'm in it.
So today we are talking about tabletop games, which is very broad subject, Iffy, that we chose.
Oh yeah, it's super broad, and really this is a good time to kind of like really nail this idea of the show and the future of it, because I know on past episodes people have been left wanting more and why we didn't cover this or something we might have missed, and really I think our first pass in a lot of these subjects are going to be very general, and then we jump in, we zero in. Like, this is a tabletop episode, but I already have a chess episode planned. It's going to be all about chess for all my chess heads who are like, yeah! You know, they just was like, yeah, did you get a checkmate? No, I just heard that. They're going to talk about chess. And I met a professional chess player, and I'm going to have her on. Yes, her. Which I don't know. This might be just... catastrophized because I saw it on like the front page of Reddit, but apparently that's like a big deal, like female chess players and the ins and outs and like the separation of genders in chess, which we can talk about with her.
That'll be really
at that
fascinating.
Time. But this is just a general kind of scope of tabletop, just to talk about it, talk about some fun stories that happen within it, and just even, you know, if you don't even know what people are saying when they talk about tabletop or when you see Will Wheaton on YouTube.
Yes, you know, I mean, literally had a game called Tabletop Game.
Yeah.
Or a show. So tabletop games are literally games that are played on a table or a flat surface, such as board games, card games, dice games, miniature war games, which we are going to cover heavily. Tile-based games. So, and a lot of these can be categorized as like adventure, paper and pencil games, role-playing games, which we're going to get into as probably the most famous role-playing game ever.
Yeah. And pretty much, yeah, that's probably where we're going to zero in the most, mostly because as of now, tabletop games are synonymous with RPGs and games with heavy RPG elements.
Which is role-playing games. Yeah.
But, you know, there are, like, other games like Catan, you know. Dominion was the game I was thinking of.
Dominion, yes, yes. So
sorry to cut you off. You were deep into moving on, and I was like, I'm not.
It's okay. Yeah, we'll get into war games, which are kind of my favorite. But let's talk about the history. The earliest
known... Yeah, let's do our deep dive.
We still don't have our sound for
I know.
That.
Look, I just like repeating deep dive.
We'll just clip that for next time. The earliest, it looks like, known tabletop game was a series of 49 small carved painted stones that were actually found at the 5,000-year-old, I think this is Basur
Huyuk
burial mound in southeast Turkey. And those are the earliest gaming pieces ever found.
Yeah, and similar pieces have been found in Syria and Iraq and seem to point to board games originating in the Fertile Crescent. And other early origin dice games were created by painting a single side of a flat stick. These sticks would be tossed in unison and the amount of painted sides showing would be your roll. Mesopotamian dice were made from a variation of materials, including carved knuckle bones, wood, painted stones, and turtle shell.
You know what? This kind of adjacent to this reminds me of cornhole.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you know the history of cornhole? This is according at least to my ex who religiously... So he's from Ohio, which that when dating him, I was exposed to cornhole. I didn't know... I grew up in Southern California. I don't know if it was a big thing or not.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware of it. And then they they would like, literally the kids in his town would make their own cornholes and paint them. That sounds so bad. So if you don't know what cornhole is, it's like a flat surface ramp that has a hole in it that you then toss beanbags into. And what my ex told me was that the history of it is that they used to throw corn cobs into outhouses. I don't know. We might need a researcher to look into that. But that's the history of
I like that history, though. I think I'm down with that.
Chuck a corn cob into an outhouse.
No, I learned cornhole from the white improv community that I'm a part of out here. Showed up at parties
cornhole
and was like, I don't know about you, but growing up in SoCal, our big thing was like...
What was our big thing? Nothing.
No, I was going to say beer pong.
Beer pong, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's the big like party game I'm aware of. But cornhole seems way more chill, like a backyard barbecue, throw a little sack into a hole.
Throw a corn cob into a toilet bowl. Okay.
But let's jump down this timeline. So thanks to our researchers, we have a brief timeline of game history, and it starts in 3500 BCE with Senet. It's S-E-N-E-T, which is either Senet or Senet. I'm fancy, so I'm going to call it Senet. It's discovered in the pre-dynastic and first dynasty burials of Egypt. Senet is believed to be the world's oldest board game, meaning game of passing. Senet consisted of a grid of 30 squares arranged in three rows of 10 and two sets of pawns. Though the exact rules are the source of much debate, a copy of the game was found buried with Tutankhamun, which is funny because I feel like that's tabletop to a T, which is arguing over what the rules actually are.
Yeah. He had a lot of things buried with him.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
Like all of his animals and I think like friends.
Also that thang. You always keep that thang
on. I know, yeah. Okay, so moving on to 1400 BCE, we see dice, actually. So Sophocles claimed that Palamedes invented dice in about 1400 BCE. And sure enough, they found cubical stones and clay dice during that period. But in truth, it's possible that dice were actually developed independently by many ancient cultures around the world.
I believe that. Did you know that alcohol was also developed independently around major cultures? I took a history of, this was in my deep weeb phase when I was in community college, but it was Japanese, but I also took like the history of Japan. And they were talking about how Korea and Japan and almost every country found alcohol on their own. So there had to be that one weird guy in every culture who was like, let's taste this rotten juice.
It might also be, I mean, I'm sure someone will correct us, but I imagine also it was just like their limited resources where if something did go wrong or it was like fermented, it was like, we don't have the resources to just throw this away.
Yeah. You know? No, that sounds like a very educated guess.
And then eventually what ended up happening was that the water supply was so bad that they just ended up having to drink alcohol, which is something we should cover. We should cover nerds getting drunk.
Well, we should definitely cover
the science behind.
Not even that, but remember when everybody was making their own beer? Like that?
Still?
That, yeah, I mean, still, yeah. And
I feel
people were
half
real
the improv
nerds about
community.
That. Like, it was like, oh man, I made my own beer.
Microbrewing.
Well, let's dip over to 200 BCE for a game that sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah.
Snakes and Ladders.
I love it. I wish they had kept that name.
Snakes and Ladders originated in India as a game based on morality, where the progression up the board was to teach children about good and evil, with climbing up ladders representing good and sliding down snakes representing evil. During the British rule of India, the game made its way back to the shores, and it was taken to the U.S. as Chutes and Ladders in 1943 by Milton Bradley.
Should have been snakes.
Look, that's gentrification 101 right there. They went and was like, all right, I'm going to take the snakes out. We're going to add some Chutes.
We're going to move on to the first board game millionaire. This is one of the most fascinating stories that we encountered coming across this topic. In 1935, we got Monopoly. And a lot of people wrongly credit Charles Darrow as being the sole designer. And what actually happened is Charles and his wife Esther actually went in 1932 to the home of his friend, who was a Philadelphia businessman named Charles Todd, and his wife Olive. So he went over to their place and they played a real estate board game that they had recently learned. And they became fascinated by it, and Charles Todd, his friend, made the Daros a set of their own. And then the other Charles, so many Charles in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Charles Darrow, listen to this, because this is where the sneaky part gets in.
That sounds like a character from Downton Abbey, by the way. Charles Darrow.
Charles Darrow.
I'm Charles Darrow, and I've made some board games for you. Also,
Charles Todd.
I gotta say, on paper, sounds hella whack. You know, it's like, hey, on paper, sounds really whack. Like, to be like, hey, you guys want to play a real estate board game? I'm like, nah, son, let's bring out the Magic the Gathering. Why are you bringing this trash?
Wait, when was Prohibition? Let me see if they were bored.
Very good
Does
question.
Does this line up? Let me see if they were bored with their lives. No. Okay, listen, because this Charles Darrow is sneaky as hell. So he asked Charles Todd for like a list of the rules. And Charles Todd was like, I've never made them. I guess I should sit down and write them. So, in fact, the rules to the game had been invented in Washington, D.C. in 1903 by Elizabeth Maggie.
Wow.
But she's often forgotten in this story. She's the one that created the rules for Monopoly. And Charles Darrow, in his... I mean, I guess he might be respected, but in his sneaky way, he sold the version of the game to Parker Brothers, and it became a phenomenal success. And my girl, Elizabeth Maggie, she was forgotten.
That's just wild, but also, I'm sure there's many
It made him millions.
Yeah.
It made him millions.
Well, did you know that Famous Amos, the black guy on the actual cookie, doesn't own the cookie? Like, he was like...
They just snapped a picture and were like, you look...
Well, no, they paid him like a like trash amount of money and then made millions off of it. And then he was on Shark Tank making his own cookies brand.
Did he get it?
I think so. You don't bring Famous Amos on just to deny him.
Okay.
That
okay.
would be whack. Okay. And to answer your question, the Prohibition era was from 1920 to 1933. So
they were just right there. That's why that's where this came from. But okay, so it looks like one journalist after another asked him how Charles Darrow managed to invent Monopoly out of thin air. And he said, it's a freak. That's what he told Germantown Bulletin, Philadelphia paper. Entirely unexpected and illogical, in quotes, that I stole this idea from somebody else.
Yeah, I know. That's so funny. Like, this is a time before Twitter where someone would just retweet that and be like, nah, this is a weak explanation.
Yeah.
He probably stole that.
From Elizabeth Maggie. But that's our... I think you had a trivia on this, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is about Monopoly in general. Basically, humanitarian groups sent escape kits disguised as Monopoly games to the Allied prisoner of war during World War II, which also says something nice about the soldiers keeping them prisoners. Like, all right, we don't want to be monsters. Let's let them play Monopoly, you know?
This game that, like, never ends.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, that'll keep them occupied while we keep them prisoner. But that was real cool. But... You know, we're not here to talk about your Monopoly sorries, your baubles.
Don't wake daddies.
We're here to talk about, you know, RPGs. So, like, we're going to dip into the history of RPGs. So, the exact moment when the RPG was born is debatable, particularly as the hobby of wargaming, which was a big influence on early role players, had been around in some form or another for hundreds of years. However, the first instance of what people today would recognize as a modern RPG came into being with the development of the tabletop game, Dungeons and Dragons.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, Dungeons and Dragons, 1974. It actually came in a brown box with a wood grain pattern. It was $10, which was a lot at the time. That's about $50. So it was like the most expensive tabletop game.
It is still, I mean, it's not, if you get your group to chip in, it's not super expensive, but it is when you consider like a DM needs his DM guide, a monster manual, the player needs player's handbooks. I mean, lots of people, we're not saying this is the way to go, but a lot of people have been downloading the PDFs of it. But really, like, Magic has been finding ways too where you can actually look up your character sheet and download it for free from their website. The startup cost is heavy if you're trying to go all out because you need the mats. The mats, the like, it's like usually a two-sided mat where it's like hexagonal or I want to say cubic, but it's not cubic. It's like squares, and you'll have that. Then you need your small figures. Every player needs to pick out a figure. Lots of times you got to buy the paint to paint that figure.
Yeah.
But really, you could just do it without any of that, with all your imagination, or even for if you want to be more forward thinking, there's a lot of apps and programs you can use now where you can like digitally have in your characters and you can have a digital map. It's real cool. There's lots of ways to go about it, but really all you need is a pen, pencil, paper, your imagination.
Your imagination. Yeah. Good improv skills. Yes, Andine.
Yep.
I think we should talk about miniatures just a little bit. So those are essentially your game pieces. With a tabletop war game, you often play with miniatures and you're moving them across a battlefield based on a set of rules and instructions. You're like making tactile choices and you're choosing the composition of your own army, and then you're like fighting out over a tabletop. And the miniatures are often painted by hand, most likely by yourself. And I feel like that's a whole other side. Like, people have made like a living by painting commissions for miniatures. Yeah. And a lot of people, I feel, take a lot of pride and enjoyment in this actual aspect of the game. Like, that's an entire part of a lot of these war games.
Yeah, but before we dip too deep in there, let's talk about Dungeons & Dragons. It was originally designed by Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson
yeah,
who both aren't with us anymore. Thank you for everything you did. And it was published in 1974 by Tactical Studies Rules, Inc. Then the game has been published by Wizards of the Coast, which is a subsidiary of Hasbro, which is like the, you know, one of the main hubs of tabletop, because they also produce Magic the Gathering. And it was derived from miniature war games, as we said earlier, with a variation of chainmail serving as the initial rule system. D&D's publication is commonly recognized as the beginning of modern role-playing, as we said, as a matter of fact.
We want to say chainmail was the popular game that was, like, right before this one.
Yeah, so, yeah, chainmail was a medieval miniature war game created by Gary Gygax and Jeff Perrin. And Gygax developed the core medieval system of the game by expanding on rules authored by his fellow Lake Geneva Tactical Studies Association member, Perrin. A hobby shop owner with whom he had become friendly, Gaiden Games released the first edition of Chainmail in 1971 as its first miniature war game and one of its three debut products. So Chainmail was a war game. Then from there, they created D&D, and then it was all
And then
history.
From there, they ruined children's minds with their demonic worship.
Yes, yes. Dungeons & Dragons was accused of fostering demon worship and a belief in witchcraft and magic. And
by politicians and moms and dads.
Yeah, because there was a real, this was an era of like the devil scare, where like, you know, metal music was turning your kids to the devil, and they were trying to find like all these different things to basically use fear to drive people. Sound familiar? Anyway.
Yeah, and my my family's very Catholic, and I know that my aunt wouldn't let my cousin read Harry Potter. Still doesn't. I don't know if
that's
he's allowed
why
to visit the Wizarding World, but it's seen as witchcraft.
Yeah, that's actually why I never got into. I got into tabletop right around when I started working with Geek & Sundry. I did some Dungeons & Dragons a little bit before that, but that's when I really jumped into the world, which is hard to, you know, to avoid when you work for the same company that produces tabletop. But yeah, when I grew up, I went to a Catholic school, so they were always they said we couldn't listen to K-Rock because
oh my God, I couldn't listen to Kiss FM. Yeah. If you had to listen to the oldies radio, K-Earth 101, I wasn't allowed to listen to, I had to listen to Sinatra, and I have a deep love for music from the 1940s and 50s. Another thing that I couldn't watch was The Exorcist until I was like out of the house because of that. But
Well, let's talk about the history of playing cards. For a symbol of international harmony and cross-cultural cooperation, look no further than the nearest pack of cards. Playing cards in their present form are the result of ideas and refinements from the last 8 countries and 4 continents over the course of 1,200 years. The concept and the technology to make the paper they are printed on probably originated in China around the end of the first millennium. During the Tang Dynasty of the 9th century AD, a Princess To Shang is said to have played the leaf game. This is probably a paper form of dominoes rather than true cards, but 100 years later, the Emperor Mu Sung is recorded as shuffling and dealing the real thing.
Yeah, and cards actually didn't arrive until Europe until the mid-14th century, either in Islamic Spain or as a result of trade between the Mamluks of Egypt and Italy. So by this time, they were already in something like their current form that we have today. So it's reasonable to assume that the basic mechanics of cards that we still use, like the four-suit system and royalty, and perhaps even like the concept of like taking tricks and stuff, were either established in India or the Middle East.
But yeah, it wasn't long before cards were influenced also by tabletop games like D&D, which created the cardboard crack game known as Magic the Gathering.
Your home in love.
Oh my gosh, I've spent so much money.
I think talked about, but Mark Ellis, who was on our spoiler review for Infinity War, so I'm not kidding, Iffy, at his mom's house, he still has all of his Magic the Gathering packs. Some of them are worth $3,000.
Oh yeah.
$3,000 to $5,000 for some of the stuff that he has.
Yeah, so just to get people, so Magic was actually created sooner than we actually think. So Magic was first published in 1993 by Wizards of the Coast. Magic was the first trading card game created, and it continues to thrive with approximately 20 million players as of 2015. Magic can be played by two or more players in various formats, which fall into two categories, constructed and limited. Limited formats include players building a deck spontaneously out of a pool of random cards with a minimum deck size of 40 cards. In constructed, players created decks from cards they own, usually 60 cards, with no more than 4 of any given Magic card. Magic is played in person with printed cards or using a deck of virtual cards through the internet-based Magic the Gathering Online or on smartphone or tablet or through other programs, because Magic has spun off and done other games like Magic Arena, Magic Origins, and but Magic the Gathering Online is the closest online proxy to the actual game, because it's just been going on for so long and the cards actually hold value the same way.
I didn't really get into Magic. I 100% was extremely into Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z, the trading card games.
Oh, yeah.
And I know someone else who's also super into those anime games, our guest Emma Fife, and she's going to be joining us right after the break. And we are back, and we are joined here with our good friend. You've seen her on Collider, on Hyper RPG. She is a broadcaster, a podcast host, a entertainer of all sorts. Our friend Emma Fife. Thanks
hey,
for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for popping by. You know,
this is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. So.
Were you literally playing an RPG earlier? Or yesterday you were?
I was playing a couple yesterday. I was not playing an RPG earlier. I was recording some content that revolves around the series My Hero Academia, because I'm super into the anime world as well.
Yeah.
But yes, I was doing two RPGs yesterday, a Digimon RPG and also a Jeopardy RPG.
I don't even know how that works.
Oh man, well let's talk about the evolution of RPG just to really, because you know, a lot of people think RPGs, they think Dungeons and Dragons, but role-playing games take several forms. The two main ones are tabletop, which are the direct descendants of the original Dungeons and Dragons, and video games, which have also evolved, albeit along a different path, from tabletop Dungeons and Dragons. This shared ancestry to its root of many of the tropes that have come to define them to this day. Yet despite the common ancestor, there's usually been a great difference between how tabletop and video games RPG play. And as such, the two types of the game have, by necessity, evolved along the separate path in many ways, each adapting to different technology in different markets.
Yeah,
we're gonna forget about the video game RPGs because that's for our video games.
Yeah. I will say, I just want to say on the side note, I am not as big of a fan. I don't like doing quests and things. I just want to fight. Emma, you were on our Krillin episode where we played. Xenoverse?
We were playing Dragon Ball Xenoverse.
Yeah,
yes.
We were playing Xenoverse, and the whole time I'm like, I just want to fight people. I don't want to go on these quests.
See, it's interesting to me because I think that what initially attracted me to tabletop RPGs were video game RPGs.
Yeah.
Because I played video games from the time I was a very, very little kid. And when Final Fantasy VII came out in 1997, that was the first like JRPG, so Japanese developed RPG that I had ever played, and it was this very heavily story-based game, and that was what I always had wanted out of the video games that I was playing. I mean, my mom always jokes that when my brother and I were growing up, she never had to fight with us to go play outside because, you know, we'd sit inside and we'd play Sonic the Hedgehog for a couple hours and then we'd go, okay, we're going to go outside now and play Sonic the Hedgehog in real life.
Yeah.
Right. I think mine, the two that I loved so much were Super Mario 64 and Silent Hill.
Sure.
I don't even know if those are considered. I know Super Mario probably is. I mean, because you have like on a quest to like solve.
Yeah, I mean, in certain, you know, editions of Super Mario, certainly Super Mario RPG and Paper Mario are more sort of considered to be role-playing games. I think when it comes to video games, typically, and this is prevalent in tabletop role-playing games as well, there has to be this element of leveling up. So basically, by participating in this story and going on all of these quests, you are gaining experience points that then allows your character to evolve.
I don't
want to
do homework. I have to do that in my real life. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. But yeah, let's talk about our tabletop.
Yeah, RPGs. The tabletop RPGs, just like you heard me say earlier, a lot of RPGs kind of stem from the same idea of Dungeons and Dragons, where you build out a character using different stats, and there are so many different systems. And when we refer to systems, it's basically the heart and soul of the RPG. So, you know, a lot of games can be a different story than Dungeons and Dragons. It can be more sci-fi than fantasy. It can be more present day than like a simulated medieval time. Mm-hmm. But if it used a Dungeon and Dragon system, then it uses that same kind of setup using the 20-sided die for all the same similar stats. But then you have other systems like for Valiant Vanquish, we used a different system. The system we used, instead of using a D20 roll for almost every action, we would use a leveled up dice in it. System. Sure. So like your strongest ability, you would use a D12 versus your weakest one where you use a D3. Yeah.
Or like your charisma might be like a D6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you would just roll the, you know, assigned die versus like in D&D, if you have high charisma, then you might have a modifier where it's like +4, +3 to your roll, but you're still rolling a D20.
So, I did want to go back a little bit and talk about, because I had tweeted out from our account about, you know, asking people what some of their favorites were. We had so many people write us about Warhammer 40K.
Oh, yeah.
Which that was created by Rick Priestley back in 1987, actually, mm-hmm. by Games Workshop. It's another tabletop war game. Again, it's one that has miniatures that you choose a composition of your army and then you're fighting. Same thing, people are designing and painting their miniatures, which I actually was never. Our friend Joe Starr is super into that, and I suck at it.
Okay, so this is the funny thing is I never really got into Warhammer, but I was super aware of its existence because I used to go to this comic book and game shop in Newtown, Connecticut called Cave Comics, and they had Warhammer miniatures on one side and then they had the D&D miniatures on the other one, and it was and I would always go look at the Warhammer miniatures and I felt like I couldn't buy the Warhammer miniatures to be my D&D character miniatures because it was a different game.
You don't cross the street. You can't do Family Guy and Simpsons.
Well, fun fact, the writer H.G. Wells invented the concept of recreational war games, the kind you experience in games like Warhammer and games which are bought and enjoyed by a wider population, not just military professionals. But Warhammer was cool in the sense that you built this army. It was super expensive. It's probably one of the
because
most expensive
Warhammer
tabletop
is
games.
And time consuming.
And is very dependent on actually having maps and miniatures, unlike if you were talking about earlier how Dungeons & Dragons, yes, you can have maps and miniatures, but it's not actually necessary for playing the game.
And you need multiple miniatures for Warhammer.
Yeah.
You're building an army to play out this war game. And so that's where the kind of like painting and miniature design comes in, because as an army, you choose colors that you paint all of your figures with, and you kind of build it out that way. And then lots of times you're doing orcs, so you got to get the color of the orc skin. Mm-hmm. It's wild.
And the elves, and yeah.
Yeah.
So, Emma, what was your, like, first introduction, I guess?
So, as I mentioned earlier, I was really into video game RPGs, and I had a friend who I knew from, like, an acting camp program, and she also was really into anime and video games, and her dad had been super into Dungeons & Dragons from the very, very beginning, and it was in the early days of eBay being a thing. So this was around like 1998, 99. And it was right before third edition of Dungeons & Dragons came out, because that didn't come out, I think, till 2000. So he had put bids on a bunch of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons or AD&D second edition books, like character, the player manuals, and the DM's guide, the bestiary, and modules. Because that's one of the things, is it to make tabletop role-playing games a little bit easier and more accessible for people who are daunted by putting everything together themselves. Yeah. They do actually sell modules, which are basically these pre-written little kits of, okay, so this is what this adventure is going to be. Here's all the creatures they're going to come across. These are the non-player characters or NPCs that can be either helpful or a hindrance, sometimes depending on how the characters roll. And so, yeah, my friend Cassie, her dad Chris, he had gotten all of this Dungeons & Dragons material, and he didn't really have a group of friends that was as reliable to play with as, you know, a group of teenage girls. So he basically asked us if we wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons and learn how to do it. And I had been so fascinated by the concept, because, again, I used to always play these video games we'd go outside and play video games in real life. Mm-hmm. So to me, this was the opportunity to create a character and tell these stories in a new way that I previously was just kind of like playing make believe with my brother and my neighbors.
So we started
our first campaign of Dungeons and Dragons,
and it kind of has moved on to what you do now with your Star Wars show.
Because
I know that somebody had responded in that tweet with the Star Wars RPG that they play. Is that the one that you guys play on the stream?
Yes, we do. We play on the Star Wars RPG that I do over at Hyper RPG. I do a show called Pencils and Parsecs, and we play the Fantasy Flight Edge of the Empire role-playing system.
Yeah.
So Fantasy Flight has been the publisher of Star Wars role-playing games since 2012. Prior to that, there were a couple other companies that published Star Wars role-playing games. So the first one was West End Games, which was just Star Wars, the role-playing game. That system was eventually retooled to be just a generic space opera RPG, mm-hmm. probably when West End Games lost the rights to Star Wars, which then went to Wizards of the Coast. So the Wizards of the Coast, in both of these systems, used actually numbered dice. I think the West End Games used mostly like a D6 system, so the same kind of dice that you would find in pretty much any board game.
Yeah.
And then I've never played the Wizards of the Coast one, but Wizards of the Coast tends to use that D20 system, so it's probably a little bit more reminiscent of Dungeons & Dragons. But the thing that's really cool about the Fantasy Flight games is, as you were mentioning with the Valiant Vanquished, it's not a D20 system. There's not even numbers involved in their role-playing system at all. It's all just dice with symbols. And so symbols cancel each other out. And depending on how skilled your character is at a thing, it just affects the number of kind of good dice that you get to roll against the bad dice. And then if you have skill ranks, there's like a leveled up version of the good dice that's basically a proficiency dice that's like, yay, I'm good at this thing. And so then you roll that dice. It sounds way more complicated than it is. Like, once you have played it and rolled those dice a few times, you learn it really, really fast. And the thing that's really fun about it is that you can succeed at a roll. So let's say that, you know, the character that I play on Pencils and Parsecs, her name is Kilara Faye. She is the captain of our ship, the Yojimbo, and our little crew. And she's not very good at fighting, but damn, is she charming. She's good at talking her way in and out of situations. So let's say that
That's so much required. To me, what I was going to say is so fascinating that this has become so popular, like this style of RPG, because it requires a level of storytelling and yes-anding and collaboration with other people, and like, it involves some type of like talent to be able to, I feel like, get with, at least with this type of what we're talking about, this type of RPG, in order to get your character, you know, their charisma or whatever, in order for them to live, is like, it requires so much storytelling.
I find that playing characters that are more, you know, the kind of talker characters or even some other kind of support character, there is something really fun in that challenge of when you do find yourself in a combat situation and go, okay, this is not my forte. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the interesting things with coming into like RPGs from like a video game standpoint, where I feel like in video games, you're usually always fighting your way out and always able to, where, and I feel like, you know, the exception to the rule would be games like Fallout and Skyrim, which are basically built almost very similar. I would say they're built on a Dungeons and Dragons-esque system, since there's like charisma checks and stuff like that.
Yeah, you get that a little bit in like some of the Star Wars games too, like Knights of the Old Republic and the MMO or massive multiplayer online sequel, which is just the Old Republic.
Yeah. But, you know, you have that option where it's like, yeah, you can build a character around just talking your way through things, not battling. But sometimes you can't avoid it. And now you have to use your wits because, you know, everything is so linear, I think, with a lot of video games because you are held down by the technology or the engine that the game has built for you to have the combat. Whereas, like, you know, there's been lots of games where we've accidentally one-shot a whole room of enemies because, like, we had a like a wizard or a mage who, like, turned the ground into ice spikes, and then the DM was like, well, they're all dead because I didn't realize that they're in a puddle of water. Sure. So it just...
And that is the beauty of tabletop role-playing games is, as you say, if you are not limited by a game engine and what the game engine has been pre-programmed to do, it is just whatever your imagination can come up with. And Danny brings up the idea of improv. It's a lot of yes anding. And so, in my opinion, a good GM will go, okay, and
oh my God,
what happens?
Zach, who was on our Twitch episode, he was our GM for Iffy and I's show, which is a game master. So they essentially act as like the referee, the narrator. They're kind of like they oversee and often try to kill you. And Zach's
I was very disappointed. I GM'd a couple, sometimes on Pencils and Parsecs we'll do side stories because, you know, in regular Star Wars canon, you're getting these side stories with Rogue One and the young Han Solo movie. So we also do them, and we have players GM those episodes. So like Hector Navarro, who I know was on your show, GM'd one of them. Joe Starr, who we mentioned earlier on this show, GM'd an episode, and I've GM'd twice now. And I was a little disappointed that nobody died.
Well, what is that? I just think it's such a huge undertaking to GM. Like, can you talk about what that's like to kind of be the leader in an RPG?
I mean, I think for me, I actually benefit a lot from the fact that I have played a lot of game RPGs.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, yes, I have played as a player a lot, and we've been doing Pencils and Parsecs for about a year and a half now, so I feel very, very comfortable with that Edge of the Empire system.
Yeah, and just to clarify, Pencils and Parsecs is a live show, so you can watch Emma and her castmates playing this game live.
Yep.
So they're storytelling live, they're like having these actions of their characters.
Yeah, I want to touch on that too, because, you know, I am subscribe to the D&D subreddit, and that's always interesting because you get to hear real people complain and talk about their own campaigns that they're having with their friends, and there seems to be like a debate, and I think it's a balance of both these things where, you know, there's generally two types of DMs. There's the DM who wants to work to tell the best story, but then you have some DMs who are like playing against the players, and there's a huge debate whether or not you want to do that. And I think, you know, there's something about the mix of the two, because you also don't want to be a pushover GM where it's just easy and you're just, because you're like, this will tell the best story, but you also don't want to make it grueling for the players where it's just so challenging when they're trying to
that. I hated it. But I was gonna say, one time I did accidentally I just was like, I walked somewhere and he was like, you were in a car. So I like stepped out of a moving vehicle, my character did.
I feel that Bert Jennings, who is RGM for Pencils and Parsecs, he is great, and he really does strike that good balance of, he is working with the players to tell a compelling story, but he's not going to make it easy for us. And sometimes that's in the form of, we do encounter enemies that are extremely difficult to overcome, and we have to resort to extreme measures to do it. I know that my character personally has taken some very extreme measures to overcome foes, but a lot of the time it is, you know, emotional obstacles as well. I think that's one of the things that's so fun is everyone's creating, and this goes for all role-playing games, you have the opportunity to create these characters and these backstories, and, you know, you send the GM information about what has happened to your character in the past and what made them who they are as a person. And then when the game master or dungeon master, however you're referring to them as, brings those elements in, it's so satisfying as a player. And so, you know, for me, when I've GM'd before, it's again, number one, being really, really familiar with the role-playing system. I think that it does help to have been a player, and also having a real love of video games and the idea of, okay, well, in order to make this thing happen, you need to do this action to trigger it and whatnot. And so I just basically create a handful of scenarios and go, well, any of these things could happen based on how the players attempt to approach this challenge that they need to overcome. All of the paths ultimately for me lead to the same general conclusion, but I mean, you really think on your feet. It takes a lot of improvisation. I had created this character who I had intended for them to meet in this medical research facility that these characters were in. They were on this rescue mission. And again, we are doing the show live on Twitch for an audience, and we have basically a 3-hour time period in which to do it. Our sessions tend to last about 2.5 hours. And so I was at that, you know, 2 hour and 20, maybe 30 minute mark. And I went, I'm not going to get a chance to do this character. I'll just scrap him.
Oh, yeah.
And then as we were wrapping up the session, I went, oh, wait, I'm going to have these guys meet him at the very end and end on a cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah, that's
you know what I mean? So it's really fun. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, and I had a chance to DM for the Black Panther RPG, and it really is funny how it flips where, like, I don't know, as a player, sometimes it feels like you've been going a minute, but as a DM, time goes by so fast because you're just kind of, you're building the goalpost and you're pulling it back. And it's easy to understand why most typical RPG, tabletop RPG games can last 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, totally.
But I don't want to stay on RPGs too long because I know there's some tabletop heads who are gripping theirs. Like, it's not just it.
We're tired of Dungeons and Dragons.
So we'll jump onto some of these games that some people tweeted at us. And I was surprised. A few of these I've actually played. Like, one of them, have you guys ever played Mysterium?
No.
So Mysterium's a really fun game. It's set in the 1920s. I'll just read like the blurb and then tell you what it is.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard of this before.
So in the 1920s, Mr. Mac McDowell, a gifted astrologist, immediately detected a supernatural being upon entering his new house in Scotland. He gathered eminent mediums of his time for an extraordinary seance, and they all have 7 hours to contact the ghost and investigate any clues that can provide to unlock an old mystery.
Ooh.
So, and then it's like, unable to talk, an amnesiac ghost communicates with the mediums through visions, which are represented in the game by illustrated cards. The mediums must decipher the images to help the ghost remember how he was murdered, who did the crime, where did it take place, which weapon caused the death. The more mediums cooperate and guess well, the easier it is to catch the culprit. So this one is really fun. So basically, one player is the ghost, and it's almost like a cool version of charades. So one player is a ghost, all the other players are these mediums, and you're trying to, like they said, you're trying to find out the murder weapon and the place they were murdered in the house. And so you have a board with all these different places in the house, and everyone is assigned a different murderer, a different place, and a different weapon, and you're trying to help these players with these art cards. Now, I read that before cracking it open, and I chose to be the ghost, and I was like, oh, this shouldn't be too rough. But these art cards are very abstract. Like, it really doesn't show you anything. So you have to use clues. Like, I'm trying to see if they have any pictures of the art cards. Like, they're very, like, it's like a, like, flower and a ring, and like, it looks nothing like it. So you'll have to do things where, like, because you can give them any number, like, there's a number of cards you can give them. So, like, sometimes I'll give them all red cards because it took place with someone who murdered him had red hair. And you have to do tricks like that. So it's very complicated. Those are like tabletop board games that I feel blend the like heavy nerd stuff like D&D, but also like it's not something that, you know, grandma's going to pop out. Like, it's
another one like that our friends, Christopher Smith Bryant and Ryan Leslie Fisher, have every month. They have a werewolf party. It is the most fun game ever. I love it. For anyone that hasn't played Werewolf, it's very similar to that iffy where you have, I think it's four or five werewolves, and everyone else is kind of like a villager, and everyone has to put their head down so you don't know, and people are ratting each other out, and then there's like, oh, there's so many cool characters in it, and like they just really get into it, and then you see friends turn on each other. It is, oh, I highly recommend it. It is just so much. I always thought like, man, I don't know, like gonna go play a game, and it is like the most fun game, especially if you're good at line.
Oh yeah.
But we're gonna get into some more of our favorite games and ones, if you're a beginner, ones that you want to check out right after this. And we're back. Werewolf, so much fun. You know what, I've killed a couple of people. There were a couple of times I fooled people. I was also like a.
Someone's gonna use that sound bite, and that's gonna.
I've
be
killed people.
just that, and that's gonna bite. Be your legacy.
Yeah.
So, what are some other ones? If I'll start with you, that you would recommend to people, either just starting out or ones you know that might not be RPGs that are just.
Yeah, I think the perfect one that's for someone just starting out, really trying to dip their foot into tabletop, is Star Realms. It's like $20 for a deck that's big enough for two players. And if you get real like gung-ho about it, someone else can buy a deck for $20 and you can use two decks to make it a four-player game.
Oh, damn.
But it's a very similar deck building game like Dominion, and it's very simple. I think it's on just a sheet of paper that kind of teaches you how to play it, but it's easy to learn, difficult to master, and it's fun because it's just a deck of cards. You'll have a buying space. So basically the way the game works is you have life, and then you have currency that you get from the cards you draw, and you use the currency that you get from the cards you draw to buy other cards from the middle of the field, we'll say. And you use those cards to either attack or to get more currency to buy other cards. And there's different factions within those cards that kind of combo together.
Yeah.
And what's cool about it is you're balancing your ability to attack versus your ability to buy cards, because, you know, obviously the more cards you do that do damage, they might not be able to afford you stronger cards that may be more expensive. It's a very fun game, very easy to learn, and it's super cheap, very easy entry. The game, I think the other side of the rules is the playmat too. Highly recommend if you're looking for just a nice fun deck building game that'll be good. If you're also into trying it out but don't really want to play it, they actually have a free app on the App Store. On I think both Android and Apple, look up Star Realms. You can try the game out for free just with the app, and then buy the deck of cards on Amazon for $20.
Another fun game that I like to play is Super Fight.
Oh yeah.
Super a lot of us really have fun. Played. I remember they had a Super Fight. Normally they have something set up at like the cons and stuff.
Yeah, where
you
play,
they'll pull in. You and I played, didn't we, Iffy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So Super Fight is basically it's kind of like a card game. Like you're given cards where you have to fight as this like character. So the ones I'm looking at now are Abraham Lincoln riding a Segway with a long metal claw. Yeah,
it's a very fun game. It's like it's a party game that you can play. You draw a character and an ability.
Yeah.
And then the person next to you does the same thing. And you argue to the rest of the players why your character should win in the fight.
Yeah. You can be absurd as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically like a cool, more adult apples to apples.
Sure. It is. Yeah. But it relies on your wit and improv, I feel like, be able, your charisma. It's just so fascinating to me that it's like, it relies so much on you, like being able to win people over with your storytelling / arguing abilities.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Absolutely. No, I love Super Fight. And there's all kinds of expansion decks too. Yeah. So it's like, if you're really into anime, there are anime Super Fight decks.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very good time. I think in terms of if you did want to get into tabletop role playing and are intimidated by the many, many dice involved in playing Dungeons and Dragons, which is also another cost of it, there's a really great role-playing system, which is called Feng Shui. It's by Atlas Games. You can actually download all of the stuff for it. And the concept behind it is an action movie RPG. You only need six-sided dice to play. So just go any of your
Don't Wake Daddy.
Yeah, go.
No, I'm just
go
kidding. I don't know if he had any.
Don't Wake Daddy. Crackers in My Bed. You know, all those good ones.
I'm going to go on eBay and order that right
don't
now.
Don't Wake Daddy.
Do they still have Don't Wake Daddy?
I like died when you mentioned that game.
Yeah. I know she was laughing on
I remember side. It so well. But anyway, yeah, it's really fun. And on there, they have different modules you can download. There's like a 2-hour starter pack. There's a 20-minute just like quick game. And it's designed for just everything to be super fast. They have all the character sheets for you on there. So it gives you whatever little like modifiers you have. But literally, it's just like constantly rolling D6. You're making up your attacks. Again, it's all that idea of collaboratively telling a story.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than focusing on doing a lot of math.
Yeah. Which, holy crap, y'all. Don't Wake Daddy unopened is $50.
Whoa!
That reminds me of like, yeah, whenever I keep going back and forth. I'll buy my N64, then I'll sell it, then I'll buy another one. Like I did that in college after I sold my original one from like middle school. Or elementary school, and the games, some of them are still so expensive.
Oh, yeah. Especially
the classics.
You think
they'd be like $10, but they're not.
Yeah.
$50 Don't Wake Daddy. Okay. Yeah, I was going to say I just played Pitch Storm, which is a lot like Super Fight. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very fun concept. Yeah, it's super fun.
These are all like just fun ones to play with your friends. I think you're dealt a card where you essentially have to like pitch as writers, you're pitching essentially to like execs and getting them again with your charisma.
Yes.
So if you're not a very, if you're not able to win people over, I don't know, these games can actually help.
But yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Train you.
And I think that in of itself is what is so great about tabletop games, particularly tabletop role-playing games, because ultimately, if you're playing Dungeons & Dragons and you fail a roll, it's teaching you how to cope with and adapt to failure in a very safe setting.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
Because there's no long-term consequences for you, you know, missing when you swing your sword at an orc.
Or, but if you, you miss a saving throw, your character's dead.
Well, there is that. But you can roll a new character in Dungeons and Dragons, or they could use a resurrection spell on you. There's so many ways to creatively adapt to your failure, and that is a really important life lesson, I think.
Yeah.
But all my big ballers out there who are like, nah, not expensive enough. Yeah, definitely check out Warhammer 40K. Take out a loan for the house. And then with that, you'll be able to buy the starter kit.
Hey, if you have painted your miniatures, even if they're not from Warhammer, send them to me. I kind of want to see them. I'm not like our friend Joe Starr. He has a whole setup in his house and he just like paints them. He posts it on his Instagram and stuff, all the little dudes that he's painting. All the little dudes and dudettes that he's painting.
It was more important for me when I was playing Dungeons & Dragons growing up to draw artwork of my characters.
Yeah. That's a big thing that's like just flooding the D&D subreddit is artwork of people's characters.
Yeah.
When Iffy and I were at Hyper RPG, and I think someone probably did this for you too, someone made miniatures of us.
Yes, we have them. The custom Hero Forge that have been turned into Heroclix figures.
But even that I was frightened by. I was like, I don't want it to paint me. I'm not good at it.
Yeah. I need to paint mine. Mine has a couple of because I'm well known on the internet for my love of porgs.
Mm-hmm.
There are some little teeny miniature porgs that are like
so
on my character's little Heroclix stand.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
I was just, this is such a, we're definitely gonna revisit this topic again because there's so much to cover.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, we're going to have to do a D&D episode.
I know.
We're going to have to do a Warhammer episode. We're going to have, don't worry, y'all. This is just the basics.
Intro. Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then you get into the deep stuff.
That's what I like to think about with a lot of these is we're covering the basics and then we can go further. Like for a Comic-Con one, we're going to do an E3 episode.
Oh, yeah.
And an Anime Expo episode. So
But definitely don't let that hinder you from telling us what you would like to see in the Warhammer apps. What do you want to talk about? Some personal gripes you might have with the game or, you know, the depth that you may be in because of the game, because we'd love talking about that on the game. Guys, if you didn't get it by now, Warhammer is expensive. All right, y'all. Emma, where can people find
you? You can find me all over the internet, wherever Emma Fifes are sold, at my name. I'm at Emma Fife on Twitter and on Instagram. That is where I mostly am. Also, be sure to, since we are talking about role-playing games here, check out Pencils and Parsecs, our Star Wars role-playing game where we use the Edge of the Empire system on Hyper RPG every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. And yeah, I'm doing lots of other stuff. You can find me hanging around the Schmodown a fair amount over on Collider. I pop up every now and then on stuff at Screen Junkies. So,
it's
you know,
all around,
yeah,
around.
I am a woman about the internet.
About that business.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we have a new anime show over on Hyper's YouTube channel called Anime Club, where we are, it's basically, we're treating it like a book club. So we're just picking anime series that we like and we're talking about them in chunks. So nice. Right now we're talking about Cowboy Bebop, which has been real fun.
Super fun.
Yeah.
I'm at Ms. Danny Fernandez, MSDANIFERNANDEZ. You can catch me playing Don't Wake Daddy. I'm going to order it right now. Iffy and Emma, will you guys come over and play it with me?
Yeah, I will definitely come over and play.
I'm going to be the nostalgic 90s kid. What else did we have during this time? Mousetrap?
Oh, yeah, Mousetrap.
Trouble.
There was this great game called 13 Dead End Drive, where you could just get killed by various objects in the house coming out. After you, not in an enchanted way, it would be like a chandelier falling kind of thing. Gosh, what else? Many, many versions of Clue. I played a lot of Clue as a kid.
Same.
And you can find me at Iffy Wadiwe, IFYNWADIWE on Twitter and Instagram. And make sure you follow Nerdificent on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on all those platforms. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, please give us a 5-star review. I've already laid down the rules of what you're going to get when we get certain amounts of reviews. I'm going to put that on paper so I don't forget. But definitely tweet at us what you'd like to hear, what word you'd like us to zero in future episodes, what you liked. You can keep what you didn't like to yourself. But, you know, I love y'all. Thank y'all. Stay nice.